Good morning, good morning, good morning, and welcome to City Matters right here on K1, the one you trust. It is 9:30, 70 degrees, and Mike Bailey and the whole gang are in here today. Oh, my goodness sakes. Mr. Bailey, saw you on Saturday out there at the 9/11 remembrance with the Lowe family Young Scholars.
Absolutely.
And I thought they did a great job.
It was actually, that was a fantastic event. I was really impressed. You know, it's always a somber day, mm-hmm. and I would much rather start my day with a celebration in that manner and a remembrance than I would by myself sort of mourning the loss. And, man, they did a great job from the very beginning. There was a lot of very uplifting speakers. And, of course, they had Senator Daniels and the Lieutenant Governor both spoke, and mm-hmm. the Lowe family scholars, a lot of young people that did a great job during the presentation. And then we wrapped it up with a flag retirement ceremony by the Boy Scouts that I thought really, really put a great cap on it. And I was extremely glad that I was able to be there.
And also, right after that, the Bartlesville Police Department was honored with a Back the Blue rally. I mean, boom, boom, within minutes.
It was great. In fact, I went from the 9/11 ceremony right up to the police station, and we had a ceremony up there as well.
Short walk.
Yeah, it was. So it was a great way to start my Saturday, and you know, home by noon. And apparently there was a gumbo truck that I missed, though. I was kind of...
Oh, yeah, you did.
I did. I'd heard good things about it, but then I decided...
It was good.
I was headed home, and I didn't think that I could juggle three to-go jumbo gumbos without making a mess of myself. So, but, yeah, it's a great day downtown in Bartlesville. Again, somber occasion, but really extremely well celebrated. Should give a shout out to Mrs. Jane Sears. She did an exceptional job organizing that event. It went off like clockwork, which is what we would expect from either Mr. or Mrs. Sears.
And I ran into Mr. Sears.
Almost literally, didn't
almost
you, Tom?
Almost literally landed on his
eye. I told you if I'd have seen that, I'd have had a hard time keeping from laughing, Tom. You know, don't do that to me when I'm at something like that. Oh, man.
What we got going on here today?
Well, we've got a lot of things going on. Had our council meeting last week, and actually had quite a few items of pretty good significance. They might have seemed to have passed without much thought, but that's because there was a lot of work went into the backside of that. But wanted to take a moment here and thank ConocoPhillips, as I'm sure everybody who's listening has heard, and I know you've heard, Tom, that mm-hmm. ConocoPhillips operated our airport for, I'm just going to say, decades, because I don't think anybody in this room knows how long they operated it.
As we all can remember.
That's right. Not only did they operate it, but they operated it as a general aviation public airport. So uh-huh. at their own cost and no cost to the city, they operated that airport for the benefit of the public. So as all good things must, it came to an end. The city of Bartlesville took over the operation of the airport on August 16th. However, that transition was eased greatly by the donations that were made to us by ConocoPhillips. So they donated essentially all of the equipment that we would need to operate the airport and any land or buildings that they still retained out there. So we really do want to take a moment and thank them. That made this a much smoother transition. It certainly reduced the cost of operating the airport to the citizens of Bartlesville significantly by not having to go out and purchase all those things. Mm-hmm. So we're very grateful to them for their service over the years and for that final donation on the way out. Also, talking about the airport, we have a smaller fly-in, and I don't know a lot about this one, but this is specific to a type of aircraft called a Blanca.
Yep.
And there is a fly-in. That's on September. Actually, I think it happens the 15th through the 19th. But the public portion of the fly-in is September 18th. You can go out to the airport and witness the fly-in. It'll be from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m., mm-hmm. $5 admission. So public is welcome during that period of time. One of the other things that we talked about at the council meeting was an incentive for a new company here in Bartlesville called Harrisoft. Harrisoft is we're just going to call them a technology company. There was mentions of blockchain and all of these really mm-hmm. big, confusing technical terms, but they are new to Bartlesville. They're expected to hire a significant number of people, and the BDA worked with them to offer them an incentive. And it's sort of an interesting twist that the BDA has done the last couple of times when it came to incentives. Not every company wants a direct incentive. In fact, some companies would prefer not to receive incentives directly. However, there's still ways that the BDA can work with them to make it easier and make Bartlesville more attractive to them. Harrisoft is an example of the latest way that we've done that, in that rather than paying the incentive directly to the company, we actually will pay that incentive to their employees if they choose to move inside Bartlesville. Mm-hmm. And so there's $10,000 if you move here and buy a house. There's $20,000 if you move here and build a house. And then I believe there was $10,000 if you chose to build a house in our school district. So it's people are a little bit confused about it, in that this is the exact same incentive we would have offered to a company in the past. It's the same metrics. It goes through the entire process, and you get to the end and say, well, we would have given you $200,000. This is just an example, by the way. That's not what we offered Harrisoft. But, you know, we would have given you $200,000. You can take that as a company, or you can offer that to your employees to get them to locate here. And we're finding it increasingly popular for companies to take that on behalf of their employees. I'm sure everyone's noticed the labor market's a little bit tight. There's a lot of help wanted signs. And so it sort of seems that the next big thing in economic development is not if you create jobs, people will come. It's more if you can get people to come, then there will be jobs. And so it's sort of flipped on its head. And this happens in all things, in economic development in particular, every 10, 20 years. It changes dramatically. So anyway, that I wanted to clarify that a little bit, because I do think there was some confusion. This isn't just given to anybody anytime. It was given specifically as an economic development incentive to a company. That company elected to provide it to their employees rather than taking it directly. So,
and can you clear up a little something? I understand they're going to be trying to set up shop at the old courthouse.
Right, the old courthouse. In fact, right down here, the road. You and I can almost see it from your window here.
It's a little squiggle in the road, and you're there.
That's right. Yeah. So, yes, they have purchased that.
Nice parking lot already.
Yeah, absolutely. And a really cool-looking building. I know it has some challenges. It's an older building, so considering that
we are... Turn of last century, isn't it?
That's what I gotta say. Considering that we're occupying a 100-year-old hotel, I can speak to owning and operating out of an old building. It's a challenge, but it certainly is worth it. And I'm glad they did that. I know that there are tenants in the building now. It's my understanding that they'll kind of ramp up their operations over time, maybe as those tenant leases expire. So, yep, we're glad to have them in Bartlesville. We're glad to see that old, iconic building repurposed. So... good. That's the good news. So we're really happy to have them here. And like I said, wanted to take just a minute and hopefully explain to the public a little bit better how that incentive works, because I do think there's some misunderstanding on it. Mm-hmm. One of the last things that we did that night was to update the council on negotiations. This is something that we have started to do at every council meeting. We go ahead and give the city council an update, quick update on where we are with negotiations. As most people have heard, we do have a deal with the Fraternal Order of Police. We've had that in place for a number of months now, actually. So we were able to reach a deal relatively quickly with them. With the firefighters, we've not been quite as fortunate. We are still working on that. The city has made what we believe to be a very generous offer. And up to this point, it has been, I'll just say, it's been soundly rejected. So we are offering raises anywhere between 6.5% and I believe 11.5% to the personnel in the fire department. So again, we believe we've been very generous, that this brings them in line with their peers throughout the state. But we're still working on that.
How far away are we from arbitration?
I believe, Jason, you're on that team. October 25th is the date that the arbitration is scheduled. However, the good news is that we had a meeting with them to kind of let them know where we stood, and we were notified by them, I think the next day or within the next day, couple of days after that, that they wanted to have another meeting. They believed that we could reach agreement. So that's good news. We want to continue to meet as long as we can meet productively and make our way towards an agreement. We're certainly open to that, and we really are. Again, we're really hopeful that we can do that. Arbitration's not good for anybody. It's an adversarial process. It's not the best way to get an agreement, I promise you. We would much rather do it in a room and reach it amicably. So hopefully that's where we're going. Mm-hmm. We'll keep the council and, of course, the public updated on where we are as we go through this process. So, and with that, I've got actually the next person on my list is sitting at the back trying to trying not to be part of this, but we're going to bring him up to the table. So if you have driven Frank Phillips in the last 3 months?
At least, yes.
Okay, maybe a little longer. If you've driven if you've driven Frank Phillips in the last 3 to 5 months, you've certainly noticed the waterline project that's going on out there. And so we have with us Terry Lortzen, our Water and Wastewater Utilities Director, today to talk about that project and give us an update on where we are.
There you go. Yes, we are replacing, there's two water lines that sit between Silver Lake and US 75 that we're replacing with one pipe. So those two pipes are pretty old, probably about 60, 70 years each, roughly, and we've had numerous breaks on it. So we have a project that's replacing those two pipes with one pipe. They have put all the pipe in the ground as far as the main line. So this week they're going to begin flushing it and doing some disinfection on it to make sure that the pipe is safe as far as to carry and distribute potable water. That'll take about a week and a half to 2 weeks to complete. And then they'll start the tie-ins for all the services and the lines that that connected into the old two lines that are currently in place. So we're probably about a month and a half away, roughly. And we're going to start the process once we get the line tested and disinfected to start that tie-in process, which will take at least 2 weeks to do. And we'll communicate with all the impacted folks that are along there if their service is going to be disrupted. I don't think it's going to have a minimal disruption. There's some secondary feeds and some other things that we can do to maintain service to the majority of the people, but there will be a few that will have to turn water off for a period, for like an hour, maybe two, to make the tie-in back over to the new line with it. So that's kind of where we're at with it. We appreciate people's patience with the construction. I know we've had lane closures. We'll have some additional lane closures on Birch, which is the main entrance into the hospital, as that tie-in process begins. But everybody's been really good about kind of adhering to the traffic and the lane closures, and we're just thankful of that. And we're almost done, but we'll still have another couple months left to go.
Well, and these are major feeder lines that actually feed most of that section of East Bartlesville, right?
It is, yeah. That's one of the main feeds, really, for the hospital, but then it also feeds the hot, warm, and cold tank. So we have that's kind of the secondary feeder for the hot, warm, and cold tank, but it's the main feed for the hospital. And so it's a pretty major line that runs up through there.
And Terry, how common is it that we would have a line, you said 60 to 70 years old, how common is that in our infrastructure?
It's pretty common, unfortunately.
Which is, again, why we seek to do these proactive replacements. We certainly have teams that are out there, they're repairing breaks as they happen. We take note of those, and especially when a line becomes of this age and we start to experience significant failures in it, and then we look to replace it in a proactive manner. But we, like all cities, are a little bit behind the ball in that there's infrastructure since statehood. Well, actually, perhaps before statehood, that's still in the ground some places in Bartlesville.
It's likely so. Yeah, and it's obviously this is a very important line. It's a transmission line that feeds a lot of people. So that was high on the priority list to do that. But you're right, we always go through and look at other lines that are kind of in a similar situation with age and with history with it, and look to program those for replacement. And that's really going to be much more prevalent in the next 5 years as we go through and start kind of knocking off some of these older lines and get that infrastructure upgraded.
I appreciate the proactive approach. I know that the public doesn't see it. I see it on a regular basis, the amount of planning and discussion that happens around these projects and trying to ensure that we're spending money in the manner that's going to get us the best bang for the buck. It is limited. We don't have unlimited resources, or we'd be in a very different situation.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, I appreciate that, Terry, and the man to talk about the fact that our resources have increased a little bit is up next. So, Jason.
Morning, boss.
Morning. How's sales tax doing? Another surprise?
Sales tax is amazing. Yeah, another record collection for the month of September. $1.86 million. I believe I'm sitting here looking back at the numbers. We had never even hit $1.7 million in September, so quite a shock, quite a surprise. This month alone was $250,000 above budget anticipation.
And what is it, about 15% over last year?
14.7.
Yep, so 14.7, right at that range. So this is, I can't remember, well, I don't. It hasn't happened since I've been here, the last time that we've had so many double-digit increases in, say, a 12, 16-month span.
It's been very unpredictable.
It is a little bit of a sawtooth. We've got some downs in there, but we certainly are better off than we thought we would be a year ago as we approach the whichever budget it was at that time, our 2021 budget. We were expecting some potential declines in sales tax, and
it's been quite the opposite. You know, we expected people to kind of be cautionary spending, staying home a lot more, but the amount of sales tax dollars are coming through here doesn't necessarily mean people aren't staying home. It means they're shopping a lot more locally than we have in the past. Very certain that stimulus money has played into this. Certain what effect or when that'll start or winding down.
That's right. When will that play out? We just don't know.
Yeah, and trying to see if people haven't changed their spending habits, and by that I mean just where they're spending their money at.
Places like Bartlesville, I think, really benefited because we lost a lot. We always lost a lot of spending to Tulsa and Owosso and places
there
like that.
There definitely was a lot of leakage outside our boundaries to other municipalities. And that's changed, and it is pretty standard across the state of Oklahoma for cities like us that have metros close to their cities that where they were losing people to those municipalities. So it is. We're not different from our sister cities here in Oklahoma. It seems to be kind of across the board.
And you and I were at a conference last week, and I think every conversation we had was we talked about sales tax, and this seemed to be relatively common across the state. The rural areas struggled a little bit more, but of course, the rural areas don't have a lot of retailer
options
to benefit them. So, but yeah, no, it was. It was interesting talking to everyone and getting their take on it. So I think everyone was about as surprised as we were and also as cautious as we were. We've been through this before. You have these little periods of rapid increase. Unfortunately, we are starting to see a little bit of inflation.
How much has the people coming in from Hollywood affected some of this bump?
That's hard to break out, really.
Until they're gone.
Yeah, exactly, Tom.
There's no doubt there's an impact from that, right? So the sales tax just on them renting out facilities and lodging tax and sales tax associated with lodging.
Spending money locally.
Meals and everything else. So there's no doubt that there's going to be an impact from that.
And I would note, and I know several people who have received benefit from them, that they have been great partners locally in our community.
They tip well, too.
They tip well. They've used local caterers. I mean, they do have some things that came with them or that they brought with them, but they've done a great job using local caterers and buying locally as much as they can. So we certainly appreciate having them. We'll be sad to see them go, but as with all good things, It will come to an end eventually. So, but, all right, Jason. So, any fearless predictions for the future?
I'm not going to put a comment on that.
By the way, I knew the answer to the question before I asked it. Absolutely no fearless predictions. So, but no, I appreciate that, Jason. This is certainly a very difficult and very odd time. So, We'll continue to work through it. We don't know where it's going to end.
It sets us in a good place. So obviously, if we start trending down, we're conservative on our estimates as it is. We could have several months of downturn and still ride out. Like I said, we're about $600,000 above where we thought we'd be 3 months into the year. So,
all right. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you, Jason. Hopefully, we'll continue to have good reports on sales tax. But we will, as always, we'll be watching it carefully as a city staff.
Absolutely.
It's incredibly important to us as an organization. All right, so for our final guest here, we've brought in Micah Seemers.
And good morning.
Micah was the busiest man who wasn't at the city council meeting last week.
I wasn't there. You're right.
That's right. Micah was sick and couldn't make the council meeting, and I think he had probably a half dozen items on there. Mike, talk about...
You know, I didn't think they'd want to talk about any of them.
You thought it was going to be boring, so...
I really did.
Mike had a migraine, and we visited a little bit, and I said, don't worry about it, Micah, surely. Surely, yeah. These are all routine, you're
Man,
fine, don't worry about it.
Telling you.
We're both wrong. I managed to salvage it for you, though.
I appreciate that.
I don't know if anything I said made sense, but it seemed satisfying.
I'm sure. You know, you got it passed, right? So it must have been good.
In the end, I'll let you listen to it. You can clean up anything I said wrong.
Sounds good.
So the council did actually pass the pavement assessment, and it's also a sign inventory assessment.
Right.
So for citizens who have not heard about this, and we do it every – we aim for every 5 years, but I think it's been about seven. What is this, and what does it do for us in our planning process?
Okay, yeah. This is it's a pavement condition model that we have. I think we started back in 2006. We updated in 2011. So we're closer to 10 years. Well,
nope.
Not closer to. We're 10
years.
We're 10
okay.
years out.
We're a little farther.
We're 10
behind.
Years out. So we're about double what we'd like to do. But essentially what this is they go through a specialized van-mounted equipment, and they drive every road in town. And it's, collecting data as they go with various different sensors, with cameras, things of that nature. And they essentially they evaluate the condition of the pavement, the type of pavement, the condition of it. Things of that nature. So essentially what this does is this puts an index to each street in town, or each segment of street in town. Each street is broken into multiple segments, and essentially that helps us in planning for rehabilitation projects, so based on condition. So
it gives each street a grade, essentially.
Essentially gives them a grade from 0 to 100. Nothing's going to be at 100.
No.
A good street's going to be about 95.
Right.
So a really, really good street. Brand new street's going to be about 95. So, that basically just helps us target streets for rehabilitation. The software that comes along with it, we can actually run different synopses as far as if you're going to spend so much money each year. It can actually help you put together projects for that. Now, obviously, it's a computer model, so when it does put this together, we still go out and evaluate the streets that it suggests, if you will. We also take into consideration input from the public, from the Street and Traffic Committee, council members. Obviously, they get lots of calls from the public, the street department. They know lots of things. Obviously, they're out and about on the streets on a regular basis and get complaints, and so we try to take all that into account, as well as using this software and this model. So
it creates an objective measure, and then of course we've got our subjective measures, which are the citizen input and things of that nature. But it's one of the few objective measures that we have to where we can show on a list that we're choosing this street for this reason.
Right.
Now that doesn't mean it's the worst street.
It doesn't.
We typically there's certain streets because they carry more traffic and because they're more expensive to repair once they pass a certain condition. We try to keep them up above a certain level. We don't want them to slip down into that. You don't want Frank Phillips and Adams east of Highway 75. You don't want those slipping down into that 60% range. So those streets are typically, we try to keep them above that. So if it ever looks like, one of the most common complaints that I have is my street's worse than the one you're working on.
Why are we working on that street?
That's right.
There is a reason.
And of course, for all of us, the most important street in Bartlesville is our street.
That's true.
And we certainly understand that. And we do want to hear from the public. And in particular, a lot of times, even though we'll bring in a contractor to address Frank Phillips or Tuxedo.
Mm-hmm.
If we do get a complaint that there's some potholes or there's some wear in a particular side street, then we'll send out our crews.
That's
and
correct.
They can at least address those issues from that level, even though we might not go into a full rebuild, because honestly, there might only be 15, 20 cars a day on that street,
whereas
we get into 1,000 cars on some of these others. But we do want to maintain all of our streets. It's just we have different tools for doing
and it. And similar to what the street department just did there on Tuxedo, they just did all the joints there.
Yep, that was an internally constructed project just east of the just east of the bridges. If you've been on Tuxedo, those guys they do great work.
They do great work, and they lay a certain amount of asphalt every year as well. They'll do overlays and whatnot as well. So that's all incorporated into it.
They do a good job of tackling those things. As part of this, they're going to essentially assess our sign condition, similar to what they've done with the streets.
Correct, yeah. So they'll go through and really not just evaluate condition, but they'll do an assessment of what we even have.
Give us our inventory, our locations.
Correct, because again, they're going to drive every lane mile of street that we have in town.
Get as much data as we can while they're out there.
As much as we can, yes. They're going to collect and let us know what signs we have where, condition of those signs. And really what that is, I think actually Mayor Copeland is the one who maybe had come up with this when we were planning for projects for
he was
the bond election. And
He had discussed wanting some money for, again, a proactive plan sign replacement. Right. And, of course, the reality is we don't even have an accurate sign inventory at this point in time. So it was difficult for us to say how many we needed to replace and how many we should replace. So this will be the first step. Again, it's a great assessment. It provides us with an objective tool for our planning process. And as I said earlier, I'm always proud of the staff and the amount of planning that goes into this. These are not, believe it or not, these are not chosen last minute. There's a lot of work that goes into all these selections.
And like I said, it really was good timing because we needed to update this pavement model. And they're going to be driving the streets anyway. They have the capability to do this. And so it's not paying them to come back out and do this again just for the sign so we can kill two birds with one stone. So
get as much data as we can while they're out there. And talking about planning and assessments, we also just hired Service Technology Corporation. They're going to do a Pathfinder assessment for us.
So we've got Pathfinder funds really every year. I say every year. Most years we have Pathfinder funds that are part of our capital budget. We like to try to address, you know, the pavement side of things, but there are other items that we need to do as far as some erosion issues and some drainage issues and some fence along some areas to keep things secure. But yeah, as part of that contract with STC, they are going to go ahead and put together some plans and design for an initial project for us to bid out hopefully later this fall. Included in that will be some drainage work, some fencing, and then also some pavement work. But as part of that as well, we'd like them, and what's part of the contract is they are going to essentially assess the entire trail system, the condition of the pavement. Because again,
similar to what we're doing with our streets.
Similar to what we're doing with our streets. So they're going to, you know, they won't be driving it with any van-mounted equipment or anything.
No.
It's
going to
be a little bit more simplified, but they are going to do a visual inspection of the condition of the pavement throughout the trail system and essentially put together kind of a phased plan to address the condition of the pavement. So
again, that helps us to plan out farther than just a single year. The state requires us to have a budget every year, but if we simply looked at things 12 months out, we'd be behind in a hurry.
Sure.
So, this will allow us to look a lot farther on Pathfinder, and I know this was something you had worked with them on, and it's great to be able to utilize a local company to come in and
It's nice to be able to use the local guys for sure. So,
and they're, of course, this is something that they're invested in, not just as a contractor, but as part of our community.
And I think, I think that definitely helps for sure.
All right. Also that night, we approved Shawnee Sidewalk Extension. You know,
that's right.
Give everybody
so,
an idea what that's going
to
be.
Yeah, so we've got a project plan that's using grant money to essentially extend sidewalk from where we left off years ago with the Safe Routes to School project around Kane Elementary School.
Yep.
So on 13th, we stopped right there about Valley, just short of Valley. We tied into some existing sidewalk, and that kind of tapers down the north side of Valley. And then it just stops. So at that point, we're going to pick up there. We're going to cross Valley. We'll extend sidewalk there on the west side until we get to the point we can cross back over to the east because of some grade issues. But essentially, it's going to extend sidewalk all the way from Valley to the high school there at 16th. And so we'll have a complete sidewalk system between essentially Kane Elementary School and the high school there. So.
And I know that was one of the questions that came up at the council meeting is that the sidewalk actually will cross Shawnee, and that's done for
a couple
of reasons. It's done for the width of the right-of-way, and then because the grade on the other side is not appropriate for a sidewalk.
Correct. And, you know, it would have been nice if we could have kept everything on the east side from the get-go. But the problem is with that Safe Routes to School, we had no right-of-way on that east side, and so everything that we did with that project was on the west side. So now when you get further south towards the high school, you have a ton of right-of-way on the east side. We have a lot of right-of-way there, and also the grade issue. So on that west side, you have already a couple of really steep driveways and steep yards, and there's really just no way to get a sidewalk in there. You could probably make it work on the lots themselves, but you can't get across the driveways. It's just too tricky to do that. So we're going to keep it on the we're going to transition back to the east side right there. There's a series of speed humps along Shawnee through there. And so you get past the hills there, and in that kind of low area, flat area through there, we'll do a crosswalk in there and get that to the east
where
side.
Where you've already got the traffic slowed
down
would be the right way to do it.
And then, again, they'll tie in really when you get to the four-way stop there. Say, I guess it's a three-way stop there at Shawnee and 16th is where we'll tie in. So,
how long is that project,
How long is it?
How long do you think it will be?
Duration?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. We haven't even gotten a design yet.
Okay. I'll put that on the back burner.
This is just a design contract. Yeah. But, yeah, well, I mean, it's probably going to be, you know, a 3 to 4 month project, I'd guess. Yeah.
And And here we are talking about this layout as if it's final, but the reality is we get into design, things can and have and probably will change.
Yeah, so this is just for the design contract. And again, it's got grant. This has to be approved by ODOT because of the grant money involved. There's federal funds involved. It's a TAP grant. That's what it is, TAP. And essentially that grant does away with the Safe Routes to Schools, some other trails, recreational trails grants are all lumped into one grant, I guess, pool there. So, anyway, it'd be a good project.
Yep.
Good
project. We'll look forward to that one, but it's a little ways out, and it will certainly take some time to get completed.
All right. That's going to do it for our show today. Thank you, guys.